was ambushed an Israeli military vehicle north of the city of Tukaram in the occupied West Bank, killing a number of soldiers. And Lebanon's Hezbollah fighters fire over 60 rockets at Israeli military sites after regime warplanes strike the northeastern Lebanese city of Baalbek. Hello everyone. Nearly 6 months into the Israeli genocidal war on Gaza, regime's relentless bombardment and shelling continues claiming innocent lives in the besieged territory. Several areas, including Jabalia in the north and Rafah to the south, have come under Israeli shelling as aid was being distributed in Gaza City. Bombing of a residential building claimed several lives in Deir al-Balah. The Gaza Health Ministry says 114 Palestinians lost their lives in Israeli strikes in the past 24 hours. Death toll from U.S.-backed genocide in Gaza since October the 7th has now surpassed 32,200, most of them women and children, and 7,000 at least Palestinians are still unaccounted for and feared dead under rubble. Over 74,500 Gazans have also been injured. Our Gaza correspondent Moti Abu Musaba joined us earlier, and he said Israeli forces are stepping up, in fact, attacks on Gaza, leaving behind more civilian casualties.
The Israeli occupation forces continue to maintain their strikes and attacks against several areas of Gaza Strip, inflicting more destruction and death among the people and among the residential areas and buildings across all areas of Gaza Strip. Let's begin with Rafah City, whereas the Israeli occupation warplanes carried out several relentless airstrikes against the residential buildings, particularly in Al Brazil neighborhood located in the eastern part of the city, whereas at least seven Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed, including women and children, while dozens are still trapped under the rubble of those destroyed houses. In the meantime, the Israeli military boats opened their gunfire towards the coastal area of Deir al-Balah city. When it comes to Khan Yunis city, the Israeli occupation forces also continue their strikes. Many belts of fire were carried out by the Israeli occupation forces against the western parts of the city and even the eastern part of the city, amid the heavy bombardment of the Israeli artillery that reached the east and the west and the center of the city. In the meantime, the Israeli special forces actually attempted to sneak out towards the surrounding areas of the Nasser Medical Complex. However, the Palestinians uncovered that special force and engaged in fierce clashes with it.
The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, on a visit to the doorstep of war-ravaged Gaza, has appealed for a ceasefire and delivery of aid into the territory.
Nothing justifies the collective punishment of the Palestinian people. Now more than ever, it is time for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire. It is time to silence the guns. Palestinians in Gaza, children, women, men, remain stuck in a non-stop nightmare.
Guterres was speaking in a visit to Rafah crossing on the Egypt-Palestine border. He described long line of blockaded relief trucks on one side of the gates and starving Palestinians on the other as moral outrage. The UN chief said choice was between increasing aid or starvation. Guterres said continuation of this war will only make the humanitarian situation worse. He also warned Israel against launching a ground offensive into Rafah. The Gaza Strip is struggling with severe shortages of food, water, medication, and fuel. And the Israeli forces have been blocking the entry of almost all essentials into the besieged territory since it started its genocidal war on October 7th. Another Israeli soldier has been killed in clashes with Palestinian resistance fighters inside Gaza. The Israeli military said 21-year-old staff sergeant was killed in central Gaza. His death brings the 252 number of Israeli soldiers killed in Gaza since the regime began its ground invasion in November. Palestinian resistance groups, however, say the actual number is much higher. They say the regime is undercounting its losses out of fear of Israeli public anger. Hamas says it will not release captives held in Gaza without a commitment by the U.S. and Israel to end genocide in the besieged territory. Senior Hamas official Sami Abu Zuhri said U.S. and Israel are refusing to make that commitment, and this means they want a resumption of war, killing, and destruction. He cited Israel's rejection of a ceasefire by Hamas earlier this month. Under that proposal, Israel would have freed between 700 to 1,000 Palestinians in return for female, minor, elderly, and infirm captives. Israel's also rejected other Hamas demands, leading to a standstill in indirect ceasefire talks in Qatar. Those demands include Israel fully withdrawing its forces from Gaza and allowing displaced Palestinians to return to their homes in the northern part of the territory. Palestinian resistance fighters have ambushed an Israeli military vehicle north of the city of Tukaram in the occupied West Bank, killing a number of soldiers. Mona Candil, our correspondent at Ramallah, joined us earlier for your details.
The fighters of the Tulkarim battalion, it's one of the branches of the Saraya al-Quds, the armed wing of the jihad movement, issued a statement, and the fighters were inside in the center of the refugee camp of Nur Shams. They issued a statement saying that their fighters had set an ambush at the gate of the village of Deir Ghsoun in Tulkarim, and that north of the city of the Tulkarim, and they had monitored the movement of Israeli soldiers there, and when a vehicle where an Israeli officer and at least three soldiers arrived there, they opened fire at them directly, and the vehicle has turned turned, and they confirmed that they succeeded to kill everyone was inside the vehicle, and the fighters succeeded to withdrew after the vehicle had overturned. The Deir Ghsoun village, or the Deir Ghsoun gate, where the operation had taken place, is located in a border area northwest of Tulkarim, and it seems that the fighters succeeded to bypass the gate inside to the territories where the Israeli forces are.
In Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement says it's carried out an operation against two Israeli military sites using over 60 rockets. Hezbollah said its new operation targeted Israel's missile and artillery base in Yoav and Qayla barracks in occupied Golan Heights. The movement said operation came in retaliation for Israel's earlier bombing of the Lebanese city of Baalbek and in support of Palestinians in Gaza. The movement has been attacking Israeli positions since regime began its campaign of genocide in October. Meanwhile, the Islamic resistance in Iraq also announced a new anti-Israeli attack in support of Gaza. It said operation targeted headquarters of the regime's Ministry of Military Affairs with a drone. Russian President Vladimir Putin denounced Friday's shooting in the capital, Moscow, as a bloody and barbaric terrorist attack. He said everyone behind this attack will be punished. Now at least 133 people were killed when gunmen attacked a packed concert venue on the Moscow outskirts. City's governor says the death toll is expected to rise significantly. Marina Kortsanova reports from the Russian capital.
Russian President Vladimir Putin addressed the nation after the deadly attack in Moscow, which killed dozens of civilians. The president denounced the massacre as a bloody and barbaric terrorist attack, as he declared March 24, a national day of mourning. At least 11 suspects, including four perpetrators who directly participated in the shooting spree, have been arrested. The four direct perpetrators were detained in Bryansk region. According to the intelligence service, the terrorists planned to cross the Russian-Ukrainian border. The Russian president vowed to punish all involved in the massacre.
All the perpetrators, organizers, and customers of this crime will suffer fair and inevitable punishment, whoever they are, whoever guides them. I repeat, we will identify and punish everyone who stands behind the terrorists, who prepared this atrocity. this attack on Russia, on our people.
The Daesh Takfiri terror group claimed responsibility, but Moscow has dismissed the claim, asserting that investigation is still underway to ascertain the main culprits. Russia's security service says the Moscow attackers had contacts in Ukraine supporting them. During interrogation, a detained terrorist said he was promised 5,000 rubles to carry out the terrorist attack. He claimed he watched a certain preacher on Telegram and allegedly his assistant contacted the man.
The perpetrators are ignorant, illiterate people who will commit any crime for money. The question is different. Where is the planning center? Not a single international organization can act in the international arena, especially in a state like Russia, where there are strong power structures. Performers can be found anywhere through the agents. We went through this experience in Chechnya. This once again convinces us that international terrorist structures are the work of the CIA and Western intelligence services.
The attack, which came amid Ukraine's war with Russia, was the deadliest in the country since the Beslan school siege in 2004. After Friday's attack, Putin held discussion with his Belarusian counterpart Alexander Lukashenko. Both leaders confirmed their readiness to work together in the fight against terrorism. In his address, President Putin said Moscow attackers were preparing to flee towards Ukraine, where a window had been prepared for them with the help of Ukraine. Now it remains to be seen how Russia is going to react to the massacre, which came in a very volatile region and amid its war against Ukraine. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
Now sirens have sounded throughout Kyiv as Russia has launched fresh airstrikes on the Ukrainian capital. Strikes prompted residents to seek shelter in subway stations. The Ukrainian army said its defense systems destroyed 18 Russian missiles and 25 drones. Officials said attack caused some minor damage. Russia also launched strikes on Ukraine's western region of Lviv. Polish armed forces say one of the Russian cruise missiles briefly violated the country's airspace. Russia has been pounding Ukraine for days. Says strikes are retaliation for Ukrainian drone and artillery attacks on its border areas, including the region of Belgorod. The Russian President Vladimir Putin suggested the country may create a buffer zone in Kyiv-controlled territories to stop these attacks. Austrians once again rally in the capital of Vienna, calling for a permanent ceasefire in Gaza nearly 6 months into U.S.-Israeli genocidal war. Protesters held signs and chanted slogans as they marched toward the city center. They called for an immediate end to the Israeli massacre of Palestinians. The demonstrators also demanded Israeli apartheid regime be dismantled. The rally was part of weekly demonstrations in solidarity with Palestinians. This week's demonstration coincides with the 10th anniversary of the boycott, divestment, and sanctions, or the BDS movement in the country. Organizers stressed the need to boycott Israeli products and companies that have collaborated with the regime during its Gaza war. Our Vienna correspondent was at the venue of the protest and spoke to some of the demonstrators for us.
So, to me, it's a moral obligation to boycott. It's a tool that works, that has proven that it can work, it can push countries, and that Israel needs this economic coverage, this diplomatic coverage, to continue doing what it's doing, and the human rights violation, and the genocide, and the apartheid. So I think it's a moral obligation. We should all be doing this for any cause that we consider that is violating human rights.
Yeah, well, I support BDS because I think it works. I mean, we have all these complicit companies here in Austria and worldwide, and they support the Israeli occupation, the Israeli apartheid, and the genocide, which is currently happening in Gaza. And Israel is only able to continue its over 75 years of occupation and apartheid because institutions and operations worldwide support it. So we stand here and we support the BDS movement because we want to stop it.
We are joining this protest, the 10th Israeli Apartheid Week in Austria, as anti-colonial, anti-racist activists, because Palestine is in the center of the global South struggles for liberation, the struggles for the liberation against colonialism and imperialism. And it's important to support the BDS campaign and the Israel Apartheid Week, because BDS has been consistently doing work in Austria for 10 years now. And it is the simplest thing that everyone who believes in humanity, who is human, should be doing. Just boycotting products that support genocide, calling for boycotts, also calling for sanctions and divestments on the state of Israel, which we are complicit in, which our government funds and supports politically.
We're here today at the protest organized by BDS Austria for the Israeli Apartheid Week 2024. We are here to support BDS Austria because Israel is a European settler state, and it could not be possible, its existence could not be possible, and this genocide could not be possible without the material and moral support of the West. So it is our duty and responsibility in the West to hit the and to target the settler state of Israel where it hurts, here in the West, and its connection between our governments and the government of Israel. Austria is particularly guilty in this sense because Theodor Herzl was Austrian. So we in Austria have imminent and the most important duty to make sure that the people do not forget and the people know that there is a genocide going on, not only now, but for more than 75 years.
And that's it for your latest here on Press TV. Everyone, thank you for joining us, and goodbye for now.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old, and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of writing.
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, March 24th, 2024. I'm Atefe Erfani, hosting this program today. As you may know, Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through your emails, your letters, and your messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our programs. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. This is Listeners Special, and here we've received reception reports from around the world, from Hector Fria Hofre from Chile, from Chandra Sagur from India, and from Ratan Kumar Paul from India, one of our old and regular listeners. So Hector, Chandra, and Ratan, thank you very much for sending these reception reports to us. As you may know, these reception reports are very helpful to IRIB English Radio because it helps us to promote the quality of our programs. Thank you for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. So let's see who has sent us email from around the world. Here we've received an email from Chandra Sagur from India. Mahfuzur Rahman from Bangladesh, who is one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us a piece of email. And again, from India, we've received an email from Shivan Paul. Stay with us, please. I will be back with you. Welcome back. This is another edition of Listeners Special. And did you know that the sky on Mars appears pink? It's very exciting. I wish I could travel to Mars and produce a report from the pink sky on the Mars for you. Well, now that I can't travel to Mars, let me take you to a beautiful lake in Fars province, southern Iran. Believe it or not, this lake in Iran is pink. The name of this lake is Maharlu. Stay with us, please. I will talk about Maharlu Lake more. So, I was saying, Maharlu Lake is one of the lakes of Fars province in southern Iran. This lake is located 20 kilometers southeast of Shiraz, and its area is 600 square kilometers. The longest part of this lake is 28 kilometers, while the widest part of it is 15 kilometers. Its deepest part also reaches 3 meters. Maharlu Lake is very salty, and it is considered as one of the largest mineral deposits in the dry seasons of the year in Iran. This lake feeds from three seasonal rivers, including Sultanabad, Sarvestan, and Khoshk rivers. The lake water typically evaporates by the end of summer and exposes the white lake bed. By mid-summer, and due to high evaporation rates and salt concentrations, the lake water turns pink as a result of the tide within the lake. So, later during the program, I will talk about Maharlu Lake more. So, I was saying, Chandra Sagur from India has sent us a piece of email. Chandra says, "Dear IRIB English Radio, a few days ago, I had the opportunity to listen to your broadcast in English. So beautiful. And the reception in my place, Parganas, in India was good. I hope you find my reception report to be of some use. If the details are correct, please verify with a printed or EQSL card. Thank you in advance. First of all, salam and warm greetings from Tehran, from Iran, and appreciations to you for writing to us at IRIB English Radio, Chandra Sagur from India. So, you have been able to receive the signals of IRIB English Radio in Parganas in India. It's a region in India. You listen to a piece of music which you found it very beautiful, and that's great. Thank you for letting us know what you think about our programs. So, Chandra Sagur from India, please accept our electronic QSL as verification to your email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs and be one of our regular listeners. Thank you again, Chandra Sagur from India. So I was talking about Maharlu Lake, which turns pink in some seasons of the year. This lake is blue in the rainy seasons of the year. Maharlu Lake, due to its high salinity of water and abundant light, is growing algae, which is called Danaliella salina. It creates a sort of organic beta-carotene that causes changes in the color of the lake into pink. Algae that lives in saline turns Mahar Lulek to pink color, actually. This phenomenon usually happens during the month of May. Believe it or not, this lake appears pink, yes, a pinkish pink. Wonderful, extraordinary. The lake's shore is full of salt and looks white. This lake is home to an aquatic crustacean called Artemia. Flamingos love eating the Artemia. There are also other birds in Mahar Lulek. Some of them include heron, duck, and plover. Also, around the lake, animals like hyena, fox, and wild cats inhabit. And this diversity is really great. And it only exists in Iran, in beautiful Iran. So, let's see what Mahfuzur Rahman from Bangladesh says. For your information, Mahfuzur Rahman is one of our old and regular listeners. Mahfuzur Rahman says, greetings from Bangladesh to all IRIB English radio staff and Iranian people on the occasion of the holy month of Ramadan. It's my pleasure to express my opinion on the occasion of the holy Ramadan. As a Muslim, I always wait for this holy month. Fasting in Ramadan helps us to strengthen our soul by regular prayers and donating to poor people of the community. In the other times of the year, we surely try to offer regular prayers, donate to poor people of the community as well, but it is in the holy month of Ramadan that we are advised to help fellow human beings even more. Salam and warm greetings to you, Mahfuzur Rahman from Bangladesh. On this beautiful Sunday of the holy month of Ramadan. Many thanks for writing to us and many thanks for your beautiful description of the holy month of Ramadan. As you said, fasting in Ramadan helps us to strengthen our soul by regular prayers and donating to poor people of the community. An electronic QSL or EQSL will be sent to you very soon as confirmation to this email. We wish you all the best. And we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Please pray for us. Welcome back. Siobhan Paul from India, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us a piece of email. Siobhan Paul says, greetings to all the staff and listeners of IRIB English Radio for the blessed month of Ramadan. We are regular listeners of your programs. The quality of your broadcast is very good and the news and other items on your website are quite up-to-date and informative. We like your programs, news, and your other programs on current affairs. We are interested about culture, lifestyle of Iranian people, historical places, tourist attraction, and destination of Iran. Please send some program schedules and other items of IRIB English Radio for our club members. Salam and greetings from Tehran, from Iran. Please send our greetings to your club members. Shivandapol from India. We are so grateful to you for this email. It's good to hear that you're pleased with the quality of the broadcast and you're interested in Iranian culture, in the lifestyle of Iranian people, in historical places, tourist attractions of Iran, and about the customs and traditions of Iran. Anyway, we wish you all the best and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Of course, an electronic QSL will soon be sent to you. As a confirmation to this email, please send our greetings to your club members and we wish you all the best. And here we come to the end of our today's program, Listeners Special. And as you may know, we are basking in the Nowruz holidays these days. So I just wanted to send my felicitations to all Iranians and all the people in Farsi-speaking countries who celebrate Nowruz on this great occasion, which is a very ancient occasion and a very happy occasion. Congratulations on Nowruz. Many thanks for being with us. Please keep in touch with us. We wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, it is the 169th day of the Israeli Holocaust on the Gaza Strip. Palestinians are still being murdered. Infrastructure is still being destroyed. Hospitals are still being occupied by regime troops. And staff is still being intimidated, kidnapped, injured, or killed. And children are still starving to death. While right on the other side of the Rafah crossing on Saturday stood the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, saying, enough is enough, but who is really going to make this genocide stop, and when is enough really enough? Well, I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Sarah Trostale, human rights activist out of Manchester. And Charlotte Cates from Samajun Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network out of Vancouver.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome both of you to the program. Let's start it off in Manchester with Sarah. I mean, Is the world becoming desensitized as every day the Zionist regime is killing at least 100, usually more, and this genocide just continues to happen?
That's the thing that me and my friend was discussing the other day, because I follow a lot of the journalists on the ground in Palestine, and you cannot keep up. Like, if there's a terrorist attack normally, you have time to stop, think about it, mourn the victims. With the ongoing genocide, it's just non-stop, hour after hour. Like today, 72 people killed today. They lined up 170 civilians outside Al-Shifa and shot them dead. These stories coming out that they're urinating on prisoners and letting dogs go to attack prisoners. Some of the stories we are hearing are horrific. And if it was happening to in any other country, then it would be all over the news. I mean, I don't watch the mainstream media, but I do have a quick look every day. And the way that the mainstream media is misrepresenting and being very disingenuous, which is a nice way to put it, out and out lying is another. I mean, it's not a war when one side is an occupying force. But yes, it does feel like I grew up in the generation that I grew up in Sedgley Park, which is a majorly Jewish area. I went to a Catholic school and we used to go to Broughton House and we learnt about the Second World War and the atrocities that were committed. And people used to say, how has this happened? Well, we're watching it happen again now and no one's doing anything. And Palestinians are the only people in the world who have to say, we're human, can you please, why are they having to beg to be seen as human? Does that not say there's something seriously wrong with the world? So in answer to your question, yeah, I do think the world has become very dystopian and very desensitized to people just don't seem to care. And it's horrifying.
Yeah, well, you know, I just talked to our correspondent just the last half hour, Charlotte, and he's in Dar al-Bala. And the information that he was giving was just so overwhelming when talking about what is happening right now at Al-Shifa Hospital as we speak, that the Israeli regime, the troops are still there, that hundreds of paramedics have been kidnapped, that at least 200 people are still being held and being tortured inside. I mean, it's just so mind-boggling, the things that he is saying. I mean, Charlotte, what has to happen in your perspective? I mean, we hear these things every day, and it just gets more and more shocking. But at the end of the day, we face another day with the same thing, if not worse.
The reason why we're continuing to face this is because the United States and its Western imperialist partners, including Canada, the United Kingdom, the European Union states, continue to be complicit in supporting and allowing this genocide to happen. The fact is that over one third of the people in the world live under some form of U.S. sanctions, while in this case, the United States is sending billions of dollars in weaponry to the Zionist occupation regime. Every single day, U.S. taxpayers give $10 million in weapons to the Zionists to continue their genocide. So, you know, we can see what happens when the United States actually wants to stop a state from pursuing something, typically its own independent path of development to the future, which is sanctions, invasions, occupation, and war. Right now, the United States is continuing to not just allow but sponsor this genocide. And it doesn't matter how many times we hear that there's tension between Biden and Netanyahu or that Blinken is unhappy, because the fact is that the United States is sponsoring, funding, and backing this genocide 100% of the way. And that if the U.S. Simply decided to cut off the flow of weapons, the Zionist regime would have a very difficult time continuing along this completely unaccountable path of genocide. The actions that we're seeing to actually put an end are coming from, for example, the people, armed forces, government, and the Ansar Allah movement of Yemen, who have actually been taking meaningful action to uphold international law and put an end to the genocide. And for that effort, they have been targeted for bombing campaigns and warlike attacks from the United States, Britain, Canada, Germany, and their partners.
Yeah,
We're seeing South Africa
Yeah, no, you brought up some interest, Sarah. You know, she talked about as far as the resistance movements and what they're doing, for example, out of Yemen, or we have Hezbollah out of Lebanon. We have other groups. And these groups are actually the ones that are upholding international law, when in reality, in this dystopian world that we live in, they're actually considered the terrorists. I mean, let's look at where we stand with all of this. And do you think, though, this is a moment of clarity for those who really want to know the reality of who's whom?
Yeah, I mean, I saw a sign at one of the protests, and it said the thing that died in the, you know what else died in Gaza, the myth of Western civility. Because I'm an English woman, and I was raised to believe that, you know, we were, you know, all the beat fascism and all that, and you're brainwashed in this country. But yeah, it's absolutely at the point now where you're just watching endless war crimes. Like we were saying, you can't, and it's being funded and being armed. That's what I'm saying. Like David Cameron, the other day, stands up in the House of Commons and says, "We are at the point of famine now. People are dying now. These aid trucks at the border, but no one's stopping them because America are backing them. America." Nobody on the news, I've not seen one single person turn around and say, Israel are an occupying force and don't have the right to self-defense, which is actually international law. International law only seems to apply to, I think the blinkers have come off the world for all time. I don't understand how anyone can look and say, yeah, America are, you know, backing democracy. We've got Sunak up there, who no one voted for Sunak as PM, going out and giving a speech and saying that the democratic election of George Galloway was an attack on democracy, but Israel, the occupation force, committing endless war crimes, and he stood up there going, we back Israel unequivocally. There's nothing we can do to stop the famine. Yeah, we could. Exactly what Charlotte just said. We stopped sending the weapons. We stopped sending the funding. If we're not arming them.
Right. Well, Charlotte, you know, how dystopian is it that on one side of the wall, there are people who are being bombed to death and killed from starvation. And on the other side is food and supplies and the UN Secretary General saying enough is enough. I mean, what exactly does it mean when the person who's supposed to be leading the organization to prevent this from happening is saying this? I mean, who's he talking to? To whom is he appealing? Isn't it his job?
That's one of the things that's really standing out is the fact, I mean, that the United States, by exercising its veto and then by putting up an absolutely fake so-called ceasefire resolution yesterday, which had to be vetoed by Russia and China and opposed by Algeria, because it wasn't actually going to mandate a ceasefire by the Zionist regime. It was actually attempting to give cover to the Zionist regime for its ongoing war crimes. And so we're seeing this happen in the United Nations as well. And the fact is that there is no shortage of food and aid for Palestinians in Gaza. What Palestinians are facing is not a natural disaster. There was not an earthquake, there was not a typhoon, and there was not a tornado. This is something that is being carried out, created, and committed by the Zionist occupation and its co-conspirators and partners in genocide. And so all that is necessary to allow aid is simply to open the Rafah crossing and allow aid to enter. So all of this theater from the United States about, you know, about airdrops, and whatnot is actually meant to distract attention from the fact that the United States has been essentially ordering the Egyptian regime in partnership with the Israeli occupation to keep the Rafah crossing closed as part of the siege on Gaza for the past 17 years. And that by simply stopping ordering that to happen, that would, I mean, certainly if the United States wanted to send its trucks through the Rafah crossing of aid and support to Palestinians in Gaza, are the Israelis going to open fire on them? So there's a real attempt in the mainstream media and from these governments, because they recognize the fact that an immense number of people around the world, including in the heart of the Imperial Corps, millions upon millions upon millions of Americans and Canadians and British folks and Europeans, are absolutely disgusted and infuriated by this horrific genocide being carried out in occupied Palestine by the Zionist regime. And in order to try to placate all these people that are coming out into the streets and saying they refuse complicity, they're talking about, you know, airdrops, fake ceasefire resolutions, and all of this while doing absolutely nothing, and in fact doing everything they can to impede any movement toward actual justice in Palestine. All of these countries continue to list Palestinian and Lebanese resistance organizations and make it criminal to support them and list these organizations as terrorists. No, this is legitimate self-defense, and it's a right under international law.
Right. Well, Sarah, South Africa's foreign minister, Nalini Pandor, has said that people should continue and increase their protesting against this genocide. She suggested the targets of the protests be the five supporters of the Israeli onslaught on Palestinians, the U.S., France, Germany, U.K., and the EU. Your thoughts on what she said, and do you think that it can be effective?
As for it being effective, I don't think it can do any harm. I don't think that the amount of, we need the amount of people go out on the streets, we need it to stay the same, to increase. Because without any sort of pressure, I think, or, you know, the Elon the spokesman who was suspended from his job the other day because one of the Conservative MPs put slight pressure on him. So I think that the watch is right. We've got continue to protest governments that are backing it, like in America and UK, for example, they're sending weapons there every week. So, yeah, I do agree with what she said. I mean, it's not making the difference that I'd like it to make, but I don't think it can do any harm, and we need people to keep continuously. One of the things, like you said, is the dystopian world we live in. It's becoming, there's that many things happening, there's that many war crimes happening. It's like shock and awe, constant. You don't get chance to. I mean, this morning alone, I've seen footage of a patient leaving Al Shifa Hospital with the needles hanging out of their arms. They've bombed the surgical. I mean, it's just non-stop. So, yes, I do agree with what she said. But everyone's got to continue to protest and agitate. Anything that brings attention or wakes one more person up. I mean, I spoke to a lady the other day who was not political at all, but because I was wearing this, she started talking about it. And then she was like, yeah, I'll go to a protest. And, you know, if you're a human being at this point, it's you've got to. So, yeah, I agree with what she said. And I do think that continuing to protest is the one of the only things that we can do at this moment in time.
Mm-hmm. Well, Charlotte, downed Israeli drone footage had been seen showing the assassination of four Palestinian men simply walking and being targeted and blown up. Even this type of footage is shown globally, and the rogue Israeli regime doesn't even hesitate in continuing with its murders. And it's so mind-boggling. On the one hand, we have them continue with their murders, and on the other hand, we look at mainstream media, and we don't see absolute outrage due to the barbarity of this footage. I mean, your take on both sides of this.
I think on the one hand, we're actually seeing a tremendous upsurge that's continuing to take place. And one of the things that the corporate and state-backed media in the West is doing is trying to actually diminish what's taking place and also limit people's access to information. Why are we hearing in the United States now about how TikTok needs to be banned? It's a social media app like every other social media app. The government isn't talking about putting protections, you know, for people's privacy for all social media apps and corporations. They are very concerned that any company that's not owned by a United States entity, that people might be able to express information and exchange ideas on that app. We're seeing like Meta introducing new tools to try to reduce the amount of political content in people's feeds. And this is after people have been getting outraged and going to the streets about Palestine. So there's a tremendous attempt to make sure that people either don't understand the extent of the horrors that are taking place, or just kind of descend into hopelessness and say there's nothing that we can do about it. But it's important, it's so critical, not just for people to see the brutal reality, but for people to actually take action against it and to understand that we can take action against it, and that the more we organize and act together, we actually do have the ability to stop this. Right now, it's the Palestinian people and their resistance, along with the Lebanese resistance, along with the people in Yemen, in Iraq, in Syria, in Iran, and throughout the region, who are on the front lines in defending humanity. And so if any of us want a future for humanity, we have got to organize, and we've got to shut down business as usual. We're seeing actions like those taken by Palestine Action in Britain, for example, to actually materially shut down and stop Zionist weapons factories from continuing their business. We're seeing students at universities organizing and making their universities, or at least their student associations, materially divest from corporations that are involved in profiting from genocide. In Canada, one of the country's largest banks, Scotiabank, is being forced already to decrease its investments in, but still needs greater pressure to force them out of the Zionist weapons industry. We've got to take more and bigger action. We need to mobilize the people to be a real force together with the resistance and against these imperialist crimes.
Right. Well, Sarah, how is it that Russia was sanctioned heavily for its war on Ukraine and even banned from many international arenas such as the Olympics, but nothing has been done to the Zionist regime, even though the scale of crimes against humanity are on a whole different level?
Because we live in a hypocritical world where America are the biggest terrorists. I mean, Obama ran out of bombs in his last year in office. 90% of the bombs he did drop killed civilians, but somehow I'm still meant to be more scared of Russia. This has gone on for years. It's like the Russia-Ukraine war. It was like, you know, we get take Ukrainian refugees, take them in, put them in our spare room. You can have some money, blah, blah. I mean, I believe all human life is sacred, so. But the Palestinians, as you've just pointed out, are still seen as a terrorist. Mick Wallace pointed out in the European Parliament, he said, when they say, no, the Houthis are attacking, he said, the Zionist regime are committing a genocide and you're worried about shipping routes. I mean, the only thing I saw in the Daily Mirror, I skimmed the papers every day, and one day it was like nothing about the reason that the Houthis were doing what they were doing, just the fact that we were going to be short of Yorkshire tea. We live in an extremely twisted world where people who say Palestinians are human beings are seen as terrorists, whereas America and the Zionist regime are allowed to slaughter children in front of the world, bomb hospitals, and there's evidence of this. I mean, the lies that get repeated about October the 7th that are lies, that have been proven to be lies. Dan Cohen is a brilliant journalist. He's done a lot of investigation into it. They keep getting repeated, whereas actual, like, proven war crimes we're seeing get denied. It's like you say, we just live in this complete where America are literally saying to the world, you can't believe your own eyes. And Russia got sanctioned because basically America runs the world. We all know that. The UN, 48 times they've blocked resolutions to do anything about the ongoing 76-plus year genocide against the Palestinian people. So that's why we live in a white supremacist, US-controlled world with UK behind him and the whole world. The only thing that's happened recently that's made me feel slightly better about it is that the world is waking up to that, because the amount of people who go. So yeah, that's why, because okay. We live in a hypocritical.
Well, Charlotte, what is your perspective on the analysis that this is not just a war between Palestinians, on Palestinians by the Israeli regime, but this is an existential war between East and West, a distancing of the global South from the Western hegemonic powers, and the pendulum swinging from a unipolar world to a multipolar world? Your thoughts?
I think that's very much in many ways accurate. If we look at October 7th, it's 100% accurate for us to say that this battle did not begin on October 7th. After all, I mean, this has been taking place for over 75 years, and the colonization of Palestine has been proceeding for over 100 years. But at the same time, the fact is also that October 7th changed the world, because it presented the possibility
of a future in which Palestine could be free of Zionism and the region could be free of U.S. imperialism and its domination. And of course, this is happening at the same time that there's a tremendous global political and economic shift toward the rising power of China, in which Russia was able to circumvent and dismiss the U.S. sanctions and their allies against them and continue to maintain its economy. That this is a move toward a multipolar world. This is a move toward a pluripolar world. And one of the things that we are seeing in this genocide is the absolute panic and outrage of these criminal imperialist forces at the fact that they are losing their hegemonic grip on the region and the future of the world. And it's up to us to do everything that we can to accelerate that future, because it's the only hope for humanity.
Well, some would say, Sarah, the facade is actually over for the Western hegemonic front. And it is a very dangerous time in many ways, because the Western front continues to look a different way when all of this is taking place. And they don't even fake it anymore. Before, there was a semblance of whatever you want to call it, democracy or fairness. But now they don't even really try to fake it. Your thoughts on that?
It's like you say, one of the things that shocked me the most about this whole genocide is, like you say, we've faked it so well for so long. We always try to come across as the good guys. I mean, we all know, anyone who actually knows the geopolitical and the actual history of the UK and US empires, but they've always at least kept up that facade of caring. And now they're just so blatant about it. I mean, Sunak coming out still and saying George Galloway being democratically elected is an attack on democracy, and we're just the fear-mongering. And I've spoken to people who aren't even politically involved, and they're saying you can see through it. I mean, I saw a release, there was a TikTok got released, and it's a Zionist. They're all having this meeting, and they said we're in serious trouble because the younger generation, I'm not buying up to our brainwashing. So, yeah, it's
okay.
I don't know why they feel safe enough. I think it's because America have done what they wanted for so long, and America get away with basically being the biggest terrorists on the planet. I mean, it's like all lives matter except Libyan lives, Syrian lives, Afghani lives, but, you know.
Right.
Genuinely, that question, I don't know why they're not faking it better anymore.
Okay, Charlotte, I only have about a minute left. But in your perspective, is the resistance the only feasible option that can stop this genocide?
Yeah, the resistance is the only option that is stopping this genocide. I mean, the operation on October 7th was fundamentally an action to stop 75 years of genocide. And the resistance is continuing to stop genocide, not only in Palestine, but around the region, in Yemen, in Lebanon, in Syria, in Iraq. And it's so critical for every one of us around the world to be part of an international form of popular resistance that is also working to bring this genocide to an end.
Ladies, thank you for being with me. Sarah Trusdell, Charlotte Cates, appreciate you being with us right here on this program. And thank you for being with us on another program right here. Goodbye.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Answering your doubts and questions. And questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman, Allah, who is Al-Mannan.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. We welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I am Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio, we have a very special guest speaker from the Islamic House of Qom and Islamic scholar, Sheikh Rouhani. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
All right, Sheikh Rouhani, for today's discussion, we want to talk about the value of worshipping Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala out of fear. We know that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has mentioned some chastisement for the irreligious infidels, unbelievers in the Holy Quran. Also in Ahadith, some of the punishment and chastisements are mentioned for those people who do not believe in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Also some rewards, of course, are mentioned. But if someone worships Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala out of fear, is this kind of worshipping valuable in Islam or not?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. First of all, we should know that one of the